Thank you for the refreshments.
And there's some whipped cream here if anybody wants any. So Thibodeau and Boudreaux were sitting down at their usual evening place of entertainment and refreshment, and Guidry happened to walk in. He said, "Look at that, I hadn't seen Guidry in months. Hey, where you been, Guidry?" He said, "I've been traveling all over the world there." He said, "You wouldn't believe the things I pick up all over the world." He said, "Well, that's great." A few minutes later, Thibodeau all of a sudden finds himself, he's lying down on the floor. He's stunned. And he hears Guidry's voice. "That's judo. I picked that up over in Japan." So Thibodeau crawls back up and he sits down again. A few minutes later, he's on the floor again. He hears Guidry's voice again. "That's karate. I picked that up when I was over in Korea." He crawls back up there, starts to get his senses. Now Guidry finds himself on the floor and he hears Thibodeau's voice. "That's crowbar. I picked that up over at Sears and Roebuck." Yep. We're in the second half of the book of Joshua. Now, the first half of the book of Joshua was basically a long account of all the enemies that Israel, under the power of God, conquered. And here's pretty much a summary of the end of the first half of Joshua, Joshua 11:23. "So Joshua took the whole land, and Joshua gave it for an inheritance to Israel, according to their divisions by their tribes. Thus, the land had rest from war." So part one of Joshua closes with a picture of peace. All their enemies have been conquered. Now we come into part two of Joshua. We find something very disturbing. They're still there. Now the reason is this. They have been faithfully conquering the enemies as the enemies are presented to them. Whereas the enemies get together, they go conquer them. And they learned in the first half, really, to trust in God's power to do that. And they didn't have any problem anymore with that. But you know what they missed? What they missed was there were still pockets of resistance. There were still centers of activity hidden away. And God warned them. He said, go after the root over there. And they never did. So, as a given enemy would come along, they would conquer it. They had several victories, and they had times of peace. But because they didn't go after the root problems hidden away over there, those problems came back to plague them. Those enemies kept plaguing them throughout the book of Joshua, throughout the whole book of Judges. In fact, 2008, read the paper, look at any account of what's happening in Israel today, and those same enemies that they did not conquer in 1400 B.C., they're still there. Now, we may be in a similar situation. Because remember, the entire book of Joshua is an allegory for our own lives. It may be that we may be like in part one. We may have finished part one of our lives. Maybe we have learned to step back and let God conquer our problems. And remember the three principles? We learn the first half of the book of Joshua, as we face enemies, obstacles, problems. One, we face that enemy with the understanding that God has already solved the problem. So we don't say, "How do I solve the problem?" We ask, "How do I walk in the victory you've already accomplished?" Secondly, we don't trust in our own self, in our own flesh. We don't trust in our own ability to solve that problem. We don't lie on the couch. We do things. What do? We do what is obvious. And we stop there. That's stepping back in faith. Do the obvious, stop. We do the obvious, but we don't even connect the dots that what we're doing will conquer the problem. It's God that'll conquer the problem. Now, so we do what's obvious. If God wants us to do something other than what's obvious, He will tell us. If there is something, if there is nothing obvious, He's not telling us anything, then what do? We rest. Does that mean we don't do anything? No, it means we rest from doing anything other than what's obvious, and we step back in faith and say, "I'm going to see how you conquer that problem." I'm sure all of us have experienced victories like that. But it may be that we're like the nation of Israel was here in the second half. maybe those same problems just keep coming back. You ever had that? The same ones keep coming back. That's judo. That's karate. They just keep coming back and they plague us. Now, it may be that we're like the situation that Israel is. Maybe we've learned to trust God as those problems come along and come along. But maybe there's a root problem out there that we haven't dealt with, and that's what's kicking all those individual problems up. Years ago, I tried to get rid of nut grass in my yard. You ever had nut grass? Oh, well, mowing didn't work, obviously. I tried weed eating them down real deep. That didn't work. I started plucking them all up. That didn't work either, because you got to get those roots. Problem is, those roots are down in China somewhere, I think. So, you know, it's very important, as we're in part two of the book of Joshua, very important that we identify how Israel failed to address the root issues of their enemies. And we want to see that, so we'll see how we can identify the root source of those problems and deal with it. So today, first, we're going to see that Israel had several enemies, several cities, kings, armies. But basically, they could all their enemies could be distilled down to three. And we'll see that today. Second thing we want to see is this. We're going to look at that picture of all the inheritance of the tribes again. The map that looks like measles. That's the inheritance of all the tribes. Now, one of the tribes of Israel specifically is a picture of us. And if we understand which of the tribes is a picture of us, it will help us to deal with the root of those problems that keep coming to plague us. So, first, again, Israel had several enemies. However, they could really all be distilled down to three root enemies. Joshua 13:13. But the sons of Israel did not dispossess the Geshurites or the Maccathites. So there's two tribes. And then Joshua 15:63, here's the third one. Now as for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the sons of Judah could not drive them out. So they had enemies all over Canaan, but basically they were focused on three groups of people, the Geshurites, Maccathites, and the Jebusites. Now let me tell you something, a paradox. The three root enemies that were left, God told Joshua, I've already conquered them. Very confusing, isn't it? Because see, the fact is, the three were already defeated. God says, I've already conquered them. Don't worry about them. At the same time, he pointed out they're going to plague you. So the fact is, all three of them were defeated, but they're still there. And they still have power. Now, so God had already conquered them. You know what that meant? That meant they did not have inherent power anymore. And that was the truth. Those three tribes, the Geshurites, the Jebusites, and Maccathites, they never went after Israel. They never once attacked Israel. Why? God said, I've already defeated them. And the reason they didn't attack Israel is that they were too weak to do so. So we have this odd situation where we have three defeated weak enemies that plagued Israel till 2008. So you have three enemies that don't have inherent power, but they got power. Anyone guess how it was that they got power? Again, they didn't have inherent power, but they got power. Here's how. Israel did something to empower them. And we want to carefully see what Israel did to empower their enemies. Because we do the same thing. We have enemies that have already been defeated, and we empower them. Because, see, we're like Israel in at least three ways in this passage. One, we, like Israel, have several enemies. People, circumstances, problems. But you know what? All of our enemies can be distilled down to three root enemies. And I'll show you what they are today. Secondly, we're like Israel because all of our root enemies have already been defeated. They're all weaker than we are. Isn't that amazing? Every enemy we have is weaker than we are. But third, we are doing something to empower those enemies who are weaker than we are. And because we're empowering them, that root that kicks up so many of our problems is still active. Now, let's begin with Israel having three enemies at the root. We also have many enemies, but we have three root enemies. And we've seen many, many times what our three main enemies are. Who are they? The world, flesh, and Satan. That's right. Now, so you see the interesting analogy? Israel had three main root enemies. So do we. Israel, all three of those enemies had been conquered, hadn't they? You know something? All three of our enemies have already been conquered. Here's the world. The world's our enemy. Jesus says in John 16:33, "In the world you have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world." The world's been defeated. Our flesh is our enemy. Paul in Romans 6:6 says this about our flesh, "Knowing this, that our old self," that's our flesh, "was crucified with Him in order that our body of sin would be done away with." He's saying our flesh has been done away with. Also, Satan is our enemy. Hebrews 2:14, the author speaking of Jesus says that through death He would render powerless. That means powerless. Him who had the power of death, that is the devil. Isn't this amazing? Israel had three enemies, plagued them until now. They were all defeated. We have three enemies. They've all been defeated. But I guarantee you, most of the problems that keep coming back to plague us all originate with those three roots. Now, remember how it was that they were defeated, but they still had power for Israel? Israel was empowering them. Do you see it's the same thing for us? Because we're empowering those enemies. All three of them are weaker than we are, and we're empowering them. So how was Israel empowering their enemies? Well, one, we want to say they weren't afraid of them. It's not that Israel was afraid of them. Whenever there was an outbreak, Israel would go quickly and go fight them. And they were fully aware that those enemies were weaker than they were. So how were they empowering them? It's really a simple, very simple way. They were trying to maintain friendly relations with them. It's as simple as that. That's all they did. That empowered them. Now you see, it made sense economically. Those people, those foreign, they were the original inhabitants. The Canaanites had things that the Israelites needed. Goods. So they thought, well, what harm could possibly be done by having economic relations with those tribes? They really went beyond that, though. Probably if they'd stopped there, it would have been okay. They actually tried to have friendly relations with them. See, they're like Christians are today. Christians tend to be well-intentioned. And we tend to want to have friendly relations with enemies. That's gotten political parties in trouble, hadn't it? You can't have friendly relationship with enemies. That's why they're called enemies. Friendly, enemy, see the little contradiction? It doesn't work. But it's unbelievably, it's their sometimes well-intentioned but misguided, naive desires to have relationship with those people that empower them. And remember, they didn't have inherent power. They were much weaker than Israel. But here's a principle. In fact, it's a principle much bigger than this passage. It's a principle for our whole lives, and that is this. Relationships empower the weaker party. It's what always happens. Now you see, we do the same thing. Our three enemies, the world, our own flesh, and Satan, have already been defeated. And they are weaker than we are. Isn't that hard to imagine? The world is weaker than we are. Even Satan is weaker than we are. We've been born again. We're exalted. He's fallen. And our own flesh, God says it's been disempowered. done away with. Now, we empower our three enemies the same way Israel did because we try to have a relationship. Now you're thinking, well, I don't really have ever tried to have a relationship with Satan. So how do we empower? Here's how. First, let's make it clear, our three enemies. The world. Can we do anything to control the world? Well, no. How about Satan? Can we do anything to control Satan? No. And can we do anything to control our own flesh? The answer is no. Now, you think, well, that's bad news, because those are our three root enemies, and we can't do anything about them. Actually, there is just one thing we can control. What do you think that is? We can't control the world. We can't control Satan. We can't control the flesh. But there is one thing we have control over. Yes, some of you are on the right track. And let's review again one other thing. Let's review the fact that the three, the world, flesh, Satan, they work together. We don't encounter them really as individual enemies. They work together. So, here's how they work together. See, in our flesh, by nature, we have a tendency to look to the world to get our needs met. That's just what we're going to do by nature. We're going to wake up tomorrow morning, I promise you, all of us are going to wake up tomorrow morning expecting the world to get to meet our needs. That's our flesh. Now, Satan takes advantage of that pull, our attraction to the world. How does he take advantage of it? He doesn't do what we sometimes think he can do. He can't throw thoughts in our mind. But I tell you what he can do. He can present the world to us as a place to get our needs met. See how they work together? By nature, we look to the world to get our needs met. So what does Satan do? Takes advantage of that by putting traps in our way. He can't throw thoughts in our mind. He doesn't have to. He sees where we're going. He puts traps in front of us. Now again, he doesn't put bad temptations in front of us. He puts good things in front of us. In fact, we have legitimate needs. And what he does is take those legitimate needs and plants them out in the world. So see, what Satan wants to do is get us in a situation where we look to the world to get our needs met instead of looking to God to get our needs met. So you see, that's how they work together. Satan, the world, and the flesh. So you see, we can't do anything about Satan. We can't do anything about the world. We can't improve our flesh. But you know one thing we can do? There's only one area over which we have control, and that is this. The connection that empowers the relationship. Let me back up. See, we can't do anything about Satan. We can't do anything about the world. We can't do anything about the flesh. But we can do something about the connection between the three. What is the connection between the three? The connection between the three is our attraction to the world. You see, our tendency to look to the world to get our needs met. You see, if we do not look to the world to get our needs met, Satan is completely powerless. If we're not looking to the world to get our needs met, then he puts those traps out there and we don't fall for them. Because we're not looking out there to get our needs met. Now, on the other hand, if we look to the world to get our needs met, do you see we've empowered Satan? Because he's going to present those needs out there, we're going to go for them. And let me stress, that's all he can do to us. We realize that? That's all Satan can do. You say, well, what about the passage, he's a roaring lion? Yeah, it's all he can do is roar. He can roar. But we empower him. How do we empower him? By our tendency to look to the world to get our needs met. Because then that triggers everything. That triggers all three enemies. Satan becomes empowered. The world becomes empowered to us. And our own flesh becomes empowered because of that pull of the world. So you see, isn't this amazing? Satan is weaker than we are. The world is weaker than we are. The flesh is weaker than we are. But remember the principle? Relationships always empower the weaker party. So we have in a relationship with the world, we have empowered the world, flesh, and Satan. And what will that mean? That will mean he will just keep doing it. He'll keep putting those needs out there. We'll keep going to them. And so the root of those problems that keep coming back to plague us, it won't go away. Now, there's an obvious problem. Here's the obvious problem. If Satan just presented bad stuff out there, it'd be very easy for us to say, no, I'm not going to get my needs met there. But see, the problem is? The problem is, he presents good things. And he presents legitimate needs out there in the world. That's the problem. So, the real problem is, those things that we need, and we do need them. I'm talking about food, water, shelter, clothing. And believe it or not, I know Christians don't talk about this, but money's good to have. I remember my father said, money isn't everything. There's always poverty. So you see, we have those legitimate needs. And here's the troubling part. All those needs are in the world. How are we supposed to get them? From Mars? Not now, because that thing isn't even working for some reason. So how do we avoid looking to the world to get our needs met? And let me back up and say that's a critical question. Because if we're looking to the world to get our needs met, we've empowered Satan, we've empowered the flesh, and we've empowered the world. So, but how do we avoid looking to the world to get our needs met? And to understand, we get another picture. And we go back to the book of Joshua, and we look at our map of the inheritance. And you see, every tribe got an inheritance. And one of the 12 is a picture of us. Now, I'll give you a little secret. You won't see the name on that map. There's one tribe that's not listed. And that, you know what tribe that is? That's the tribe of Levi. Now, Levi, the tribe of Levi, we want to pay careful attention to throughout the Old Testament, actually, because the tribe of Levi is a picture of us. In a minute, I'll show you how the tribe of Levi is a picture of us. But first, I want to point out what's unique about the tribe of Levi. As you've seen on your map, you'll see Dan, Naphtali, Asher, Zebulun. You look at all those names, you won't find Levi. And here's why. Joshua 13, 14. All the tribes got their inheritance. Joshua 13, 14. Only to the tribe of Levi, he did not give an inheritance. And here's why. The offerings by fire to the Lord, the God of Israel, are their inheritance. So they didn't get land. They got offerings by fire. And here's why. Deuteronomy 18, 1 and 2. The Levitical priests. See, the tribe of Levi, they were the priests. The whole tribe of Levi shall have no portion or inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the Lord's offerings by fire and his portion. See the pattern? No land, but they get the Lord's offerings by fire. They shall have no inheritance among their countrymen. The Lord is their inheritance. Well, my first thought is, they got cheated. I wouldn't want to be one of those priestly tribes because they didn't get land. Well, I'm going to show you, they didn't get cheated. Look at what they got. First, instead of land, it says they got the offerings by fire to the Lord. What does he mean by that? If you read the book of Leviticus, and isn't that a fascinating book to read, by the way? Book of Leviticus shows us that there were several kinds of offerings the Israelites offered up. There were burnt offerings, there were trespass offerings, guilt offerings, sin offerings, whole offerings. Now, the offering by fire was interesting. The offering by fire, the worshiper would bring his animal to the altar. And when he brought the animal to the altar, he gave the animal to God. So once the animal was put on the altar, it was God's animal. Now, that animal was not burned up completely, as in burnt offerings. That animal was just cooked. He was just barbecued. Now, what happened to the animal then? he was given to the priests to eat. But remember, the animals, who do the animals belong to? They belong to God. The animals put up on the altar, it became God's property. And then what did he do? He gave that meat to the priests. God said, give them my meat. See what's happening here? God was giving the Levites his food. Well, yes, he was providing for them. And he was doing it on purpose. He was doing this to tell them something. He was telling them this: don't get your needs met like the other 11 tribes are. You don't get your needs met from the world. You get your needs from me. See? All the other tribes had to work and keep their flocks to get food. God says, no, I'm going to give you food. And whose food was he giving them? His own food. He says, I'm going to take care of your needs. Now, you see, that's actually, for them, it was actually better than having land. The other 11 tribes had to work, plant, keep their crops. What did the Levites have to do? Just eat off the altar. God gave them their food. And it says they didn't have land, but you know what? They actually had land. Numbers 35, starting in verse 2. Tell the sons of Israel, that this is the other 11 tribes, that they give to the Levites. She gets that? They give to the Levites from the inheritance of their possession, cities to live in. Where she's saying, see this map here? So that's the map of all the tribes. He said, now every one of those tribes, I want you to give them those cities. And not just the cities. And you shall give to the Levites pasture lands around the cities. In fact, two concentric circles. For every city, you have one circle going out. The pasture lands of the cities, which you shall give to the Levites, shall extend from the wall of the city outward 1,000 cubits around. That's about a third of a mile. So the Levites not only got all those cities, every city, they got a third of a mile going out. And by the way, that would be the choice real estate, wouldn't it? The land just outside the city. And then you know what? Then they got a second concentric circle. And you shall also measure outside the city on the east side 2,000 cubits. On the south side 2,000 cubits. On the west side 2,000 cubits. And on the north side 2,000 cubits. Sounds like 2,000 cubits on each side to me, doesn't it? And that would be about two-thirds of a mile with the city in the center. This shall become theirs as pasture lands for the cities. And what he's saying is this. You have a city that's given to the Levites. And look at the map. It does look like measles, doesn't it? They got a bunch of cities. Picture now, every one of the cities. One, they got an area a third of a mile going out from the city. That was for them. That was for their own possession, the Levites. The second concentric circle going out, that was for the people in the tribes to work the pasture lands in order to feed the Levites. Such a deal? So, okay, they didn't have land. But, well, they didn't have a set-aside land. But they had all those cities and all that land. So actually, they got a lot of land. You see the little passage, Joshua 21, beginning in verse 3 through 42? I put it in fine print in Mercy. What I thought I'd do is go through this passage and pretty much go word by word and spend a lot of time on it. That long passage, I did that on purpose, obviously, because it's a long, long, long detailed analysis of every city and where the boundaries were, but it's summed up in Joshua 21, verse 41. Here sums up the whole fine print passage. All the cities of the Levites in the midst of the possession of the sons of Israel were 48 cities with their pasture lands. These cities each had its surrounding pasture lands. Thus it was with all these cities. So if we think the Levites got cheated, no, they didn't. They didn't get a geographical area here, but they got a lot of land. And remember, it was in the cities. They didn't get the desert area, they got the cities. And the cities, they got, in addition to cities, they got prime locations surrounding the cities. They got the prime real estate throughout the Canaan. And just think about this. Their food was all catered. So they weren't cheated. In fact, the Levites got the best deal out of all the 12. Why? Because God set up a system where they would get their needs met from Him. They didn't have to look to the Canaanites to get their needs met. So now back to our context. Remember, our context is this. We have three enemies that are the root of all the problems we have: the world, flesh, and Satan. One, they have all been defeated. They are weaker than we are. But we empower them. How do we empower them? Because the principle is this. Relationship empowers the weaker party. So they are weaker than we are. We have a relationship with them. We empower them. Now again, does that mean we have a relationship with Satan? Certainly not. Remember, they work together. The world, flesh, and Satan. If we have a relationship with the world, we have triggered the process that empowers the world, flesh, and Satan. Now, to understand more how we avoid that relationship, we want to understand how it is that Levi, the tribe of Levi, is a picture of us. And here's how. The Levites were what? They were priests, and so are we. 1 Peter 2:9, you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God. You catch that? A royal priesthood. I grew up in West Texas, but I spent a couple of years in South Louisiana. And all of my neighbors were Catholic. We were about the only Baptist there in the early 60s. And my friend said, you've got to come to Mass just once, because we got this priest who's just like John Wayne. Finally, I went. I'll never forget it. This priest comes out, a Dominus Noel Bescom. That was sweet. I thought, well, maybe it wouldn't do bad to be a priest. If you could do it that way. Well, actually, we're priests. You know how we're priests? There's two things that make somebody a priest. One, he has direct access to God. And secondly, the basis of that access was the sacrificial system. See how we're priests? We have direct access to God because of the ultimate sacrifice of Jesus on the cross. So because of that sacrifice, we have direct access to God. So we are priests. So whatever we see in the Old Testament relating to the tribe of Levi, those are pictures for us. Now, in our account here, we see that God made specific provision for the tribe of Levi. And that's a picture of the provision He's made for us then. Now, specifically, what we've seen is that God made special provision for the tribe of Levi. Why? So they would not look to the Canaanites to get their needs met. God made special provision for the tribe of Levi that Levi would look directly to Him to get their needs met. And that's exactly what they did. When they needed to eat, where did they go? They went to the altar of God. Because they knew that was God's stuff and God fed them. Now, obviously, those animals came from the world, didn't they? But do you think the Levites saw it that way? Well, no. Again, they got it straight off the altar. Just the people worshiping. Now, you see, God met the needs of the Levites directly. Again, tell me why? So they wouldn't do what? They wouldn't look to the world to get their needs met. Because, why? There's a principle. Relationships empower the weaker party. If they had looked to the world to get their needs met, they would have empowered the world. In fact, that's exactly what Israel did. They had those three enemies. They were weaker than Israel. Israel empowered them. Why? With their relationship. That's exactly right, Janie. That's why our relationship with the Lord empowers us, because we're the weaker party. That's exactly right. And you see, that's why we want to look to Him to get our needs met. And you know what? It's difficult to apply this, frankly, because it's not something we need to start doing differently. It's something we need to start thinking differently. So we don't look to the world to get our needs met. In fact, we don't look to ourselves. We don't look to other people. I'm having a personal difficulty doing this right now, I share with you. My company, we're on the verge of landing a couple of very nice big jobs. Big. And my connection to both jobs is a longtime friend of mine. And some days the news looks good, some days the news looks bad. I find myself thinking that I need to work on the relationship with this friend of mine. See, I think I keep catching myself thinking I need to call him and see the status of those jobs. No, I'm thinking wrong. See what I'm doing? I'm looking to him. I'm looking to my friend. I'm not looking to God. And then I got to step back and think, you know, it's God who supplied that connection to begin with, not me. See, that's what we got to start thinking differently. We don't look to the world to get our needs met. If we look to the world to get our needs met, we've established a relationship with the world. And what have we done? We've empowered the world. Why? Because relationship empowers the weaker party. If we ever understand the world is weaker than we are, Satan is weaker than we are, and the flesh is weaker than we are, all we have to do is not empower it with a relationship. Because again, we look to the world to get our needs met. What have we triggered? We've triggered the whole process whereby Satan puts our needs in the world and our flesh will attract to it. Now, yes, you see, whatever we choose to have a relationship with, if it's weaker than us, we're going to empower it. Another way to look at it, as we've been seeing, relationships empower the weaker party. And by the way, that can be good or bad. That's a principle that can have a positive impact or a negative. Relationships empower the weaker party for good or bad. For example, from the Bible, Jenny just pointed out. An example is God's relationship with us. Now, in our relationship, with the relationship with any human being, God, who is the weaker party? Well, duh. That's a tough one, isn't it? In our relationship with God, we were the weaker party. But God empowered us. How? With the relationship. Hosea 11:4, I led them with cords of love. You know who them is? Them is us. Yes. Not with cords of obligation or duty. I led them with cords of love. That's, see? We were the weaker party. And when I say weaker, you talk about weak. You talk about an understatement. We were not only the weaker party, we were utterly helpless. We had no power at all. But we got empowered. How did we get empowered? By God establishing a relationship with us of love. See the principle? Relationship empowers the weaker party. So, again, we were the weaker party, so God empowered us with a relationship to save us. Not only in salvation, but in our lives. 1 John 4:16, God is love. And the one who abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. See, he's talking about saved people. He's saying, let the same love that empowered you to be saved, let that same love empower you in the relationship. I don't know why we think everything's different. See, we know before we were saved, we were utterly helpless. God reached out to us, and what happened? He empowered us. How did he empower us? Because relationships empower the weaker party. Then we think, now that we're saved, well, now I'm on my own. I've got to do certain things. No, we're still the weaker party. And now in our walk as Christians, what do we expect to happen? We expect to be empowered by His relationship with us. Why? Because, remember, relationships empower the weaker party. Ephesians 3:14, Paul says, for this reason I bow my knees before the Father. And he prays this, that He would grant you, according to the riches of His glory, to be strengthened with power through His Spirit in the inner man. So Paul is saying, I'm praying that you would be empowered. Isn't he? Now, how does he expect us to be empowered? So that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. Why does he want that? Because relationship empowers the weaker party. And that you, being rooted and grounded in love. See, he started off by saying, I pray that you would be strengthened with power, that you would be empowered. How's that going to happen? If we're rooted and grounded in love. The word rooted is a word that does, it looks like what it is. It's a word that refers to horticulture. And it refers to being rooted in Jesus and drawing up nutrients from Him. And grounded is a word, it's a structural, architectural type word. It means sunk down on piers. So he says, we're rooted in Him, we draw nourishment from Him, we're grounded in Him, and that's our source of strength. May be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth, length, height, and depth, and to know the love of Christ, which surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled up to the fullness of God. And that mighty prayer, he says, you see, it's all on the basis of the relationship. He says, I pray that all that happened, that you would be strengthened with power, that Christ dwelling in your hearts through faith, being grounded in love. See what he's saying? The relationship empowers the weaker party in our lives. 2 Corinthians 5:14. The love of Christ controls us. You ever thought about what keeps me in line? I think we tend to think that God's discipline keeps me in line. No, it's His love. Why? I'm going to say it again. Relationship empowers the weaker party. So, if we have a relationship with the world, if we look to the world to get our needs met, the world is weaker than us, what are we going to do to the world? We're going to empower the world. That's why John, the Apostle John, 1 John 2:15 says, do not love the world, nor the things in the world. Now, we need to clarify the word love here. Because we're certainly free to love things that are in the world. You know that? Again, I know we're Baptist and we're not supposed to have fun. But trust me, it actually is permissible. And we can even enjoy things in the world. We can even love things in the world. We certainly can do that. The word love is that famous Greek word agapao, or as everyone says, agape. Yes, agape. That's that word. Now, you see, the word agapao in Greek does not mean sentimentality or warm, nostalgic feelings. It doesn't mean that kind of love. The word agapao is a word that refers to a relationship where needs are met. That's agapao. So what he's saying is this. We're certainly free to enjoy the world. However, don't establish a relationship with the world that is based on mutual needs being met through a relationship. That's what he's saying. He's saying, don't look at the world as someone, as a world system to have friendly relationships with. Don't look at the world as a place to get your needs met. See the difference? We're certainly free to enjoy the world. We're certainly free to. Just don't look to the world to get our needs met because it's not friendly to us. We look to the world to get our needs met. What have we done? We've empowered it. We've empowered the world, flesh, Satan. They all work together. And so the root cause of those problems is still going to be there. So first he says, don't have an agapao, don't have an emotional need, don't have a need relationship-based fellowship with the world. And secondly, James 4:4, he says, don't have a friendship with the world. Do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility towards God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. The word friendship here is the Greek word phileo, which means a warm, friendly relationship type of friendship. He's saying this. Again, we're free to enjoy the world. And by the way, we're certainly free to have friends in the world. We need to have unbelieving friends. That's how we draw them in. So we're certainly free to have friends in the world. He says, however, don't consider that world system is your friend. See? So with the world, here's two negatives. One, don't seek to have a relationship with the world where we get emotional needs met. Secondly, don't seek to have a relationship with the world based on the premise that world system is our friends. He says, if we do that, he says, we've made ourselves an enemy of God. What that really says is, we have presented ourselves as an enemy of God. We didn't make ourselves an enemy of God. Good night. Cross took care of that, I believe. He says, what we've done is we have presented ourselves with his enemies. Here's what he means in a big picture. He means, I've condemned the world. God says, I've made it weaker than you are. I've made it a place where you won't get your needs met. The world is under my judgment. He says, if you're trying to get your needs met, you're trying to get your needs met in a system I've already condemned. And there's a technical word for that. It's being dumb.
What's the Greek word for that?
Dumb and dumber. So don't look to the world to get our needs met. Look to God. 1 Timothy 6:17. Paul tells Timothy, instruct those who are rich in this present world. Maybe you're thinking, well, it doesn't apply to me. I'm not rich. Well, let me tell you something. Here's what it says, literally. He says, instruct those whose well-being is in this present age. He's not talking about rich people. He's talking about people who look to the world to get their needs met. He says, tell them not to be conceited. Well, the word conceited does not mean stuck up or snob. It means this. It just means not to be self-sufficient. Not to think they can get their own needs met, or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches. Riches is a word that means material things. He's saying, okay, tell everybody whose well-being is found in how things are going in the world, not be stuck on yourself, don't be thinking you can meet your own needs, and also don't think the uncertain world can meet your needs, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. I love that. See, again, even though we're Baptists, we can have fun. He says he gives us all things to enjoy. So we look at the world, we say, thank you, I can enjoy this. It's mine to enjoy, but I'm not going to look to that world system to get my needs met. Why? Because remember the principle? Relationship empowers the weaker party. So you know, in our lives, you know, that's something maybe we ought to think about. Before we have a relationship with another person, with people, with a group, with an organization, before we have a relationship with any other entity, we need to ask ourselves some honest questions. First thing we need to do is be honest and say, in this proposed relationship, am I the weaker party or am I the stronger party? We need to ask that. Why? Because remember, if we look at that proposed relationship, if the other party is weaker than I am, that means I'm going to empower that party. So we want to ask, do I want that to happen? Maybe that's something I don't want empowered. On the other hand, if we look at a proposed relationship and we say, well, you know what? That other party, entity, person, whatever, is stronger than I am. Therefore, the relationship is going to empower me. Is that what I want? Because relationship empowers the weaker party.
Uh-huh. What do we do about the verses that give your enemy a cold drink of water and things like that?
Sure, treat them kindly. It doesn't mean be mean to your enemy. Sure, treat your enemies kindly. Just don't have a relationship with them. Give them a cup of water and slam the door. Duh. I know all these trick questions. Father, again, we thank you for your word. We thank you for this portion of your word in the book of Joshua. We thank you for this amazing picture of the tribe of Levi, who apparently got cheated. They didn't get any of the land, but they really their inheritance was you. Father, we thank you that that's a picture of us, where we're perfectly free to enjoy the world, to enjoy the things in the world. We are not tied to the world. The world is not our inheritance. We thank you that you are our inheritance. Father, will you teach us not to do things differently, but to think differently. To look to the not to look to the world to get our needs met, but to look to you. We thank you that for the principle that you have shown us, that a relationship empowers the weaker party. Father, would you help us then to come to you as the weaker party, as the one who are bankrupt, spiritually bankrupt, poor in spirit, knowing that you will empower us with your love. Above all, we thank you for the ultimate love that drove Jesus to go to the cross and die on our sin for our sins. We thank you that by simple faith in him, we have eternal life with you, and we thank you in Jesus' name this morning. Amen.